This is Fresh Air. I'm Marty Moscoane, sitting in for Terry Gross. It was hoped that the Dayton Peace Accord would bring an end to the fighting in the former Yugoslavia. But if you watch the news, you'll once again see images of battle with thousands of people fleeing their villages. This fighting is in Kosovo, and though it's a province in the Republic of Serbia, only 10% of its population is Serbian. The other 90% is ethnic Albanian Muslims. Serbia and Montenegro are the only two republics that remain in Yugoslavia. Yugoslavia's president, Slobodan Milosevic, is a Serb and a champion of Serbian interests. So when the Albanian Muslims in Kosovo declared Kosovo to be an independent state and formed the Kosovo Liberation Army, Milosevic sent the Yugoslav army out to stop them. The fighting has forced more than 100,000 people to flee their homes. Later in today's program, we'll hear about the history that led to the current situation in Kosovo and its larger significance to the whole region. But first, we call the international humanitarian group, Doctors Without Borders, who are in Kosovo, trying to help the people who have left their homes. I spoke with Keith Ursel, who was coordinating their effort. He told me what he's seeing in Kosovo.
The situation appears to be getting a little more dire in the last week or so, because we have found people have been living in the bush, completely in the rough, now for a couple weeks. So we're finding people are getting more and more ill.
And how do you find those people living in the bush?
That's a very good question. It's extremely difficult. The people are living in the bush, number one, for protection. It's simply the only place to go. It's the only place for them to live now. And two, it's their only security if they can hide. So because they're hiding, of course, it makes it more difficult for us to access them.
Are they afraid of you and your team?
Sometimes it's very unfortunate, but as we drive in, we can actually see people running away and running and hiding in the forest when they hear our vehicles coming. But when they get to know us, and then it gets much better. But initially, they are afraid.
What are you finding about the health of the people of Kosovo? How has the fighting impacted their well-being, their state of health?
Well, first, we have found people that have been seriously injured with war wounds, with shell fragments, with bullet wounds. And some of these people, for example, a 65-year-old man walked 16 kilometers after he'd been shot through the upper left chest. So we do find people with serious injuries.
And what about the state of health? There are a number of reports about malnutrition and dehydration. Have you found that as well?
We have certainly found dehydration, and we have found that secondary to diarrhea. Because the people are living in the bush, the water supplies are most likely contaminated. So we have found a lot of diarrhea and now a lot of skin infections and chest infections. So of course, these would all lead to dehydration, especially under this heat.
Are you able to provide anything to help clean up contaminated water?
Well, we have two full-time water engineers and another expert in from Brussels. And we have visiting areas, and we do a chlorination of water supplies. Also, we pass out basically jerry cans during the day, plastic jerry cans, with chlorination tablets. So we're attacking that from a number of different ways, from chlorinating a city supply plus individuals.
In dealing with someone with wounds from fighting, what can you and your team do? Are you able to actually patch them up?
Okay, we go with up to four Land Cruisers with a full mobile, basically a mobile clinic inside the vehicles that we'll set up in a building. We have a surgeon with us and a minimum of two doctors and two nurses and some other assistants. So we can, although we can't perform surgery in the field, we can certainly stabilize and then transport to a surgical facility.
Where do you send these people? Where is it safe to go?
There are a variety of surgical facilities within basically the area controlled by the Albanians.
Is that a safe place to go?
Traditionally, they have been safe, but recently we know of a couple of these hospitals that have been attacked and the patients have had to move.
And do these hospitals have enough medical supplies to perform an operation?
They are varied. And they're scattered, but frequently they do run short of equipment, absolutely.
In the work that you're doing, and once you find people that are on the run, that have fled from the fighting, which people are at most risk? Is it the young? Is it the old? What is it?
Well, we find the elderly are definitely at the is the biggest risk group right now. A lot of everybody's resources are towards helping their young. They're certainly great with their children. And we're finding the elderly that suffer from chronic infections, as this is a European, or chronic diseases, as this is a European country, they're used to European standards of medicines and treatment. Suddenly that's taken away from them, and they become pretty sick pretty quick.
Do you find people are dying then?
Yes, we have noticed fresh graves, and we've spoken to people in villages, and they said that some died recently because they didn't have their blood pressure medicines, for example. And one lady died of that recently that we know of, and the diabetics now are extremely frightened.
What about young children? What about babies? I'm thinking even of women giving birth in the hills.
We have come across that. We have come across women as they're giving birth, or others on the road would stop and we would assist. Yes, this is the problem. There's about 10,000 babies a month born in this this part of the country. And access, if you're on one side of the front line, you simply cannot cross the lines to get to a maternity center. So there is a lot of basically village women assisting other women in delivering.
I know that the war has been very intense, or the fighting has been very intense in the last couple of months. Have you found people dealing with the stress of fighting and that's actually having an impact on their health?
Absolutely. There is no question. There's no question that stress plays a major role in the health of these people. It makes any physical condition they have much, much worse, any disease. One of the big items they ask us for is some form of, they think there's a magic pill or some kind of antidepressant that they can take, which there really isn't. So the mental health of these people is definitely deteriorating.
What can you and your team do for them?
Well, to be honest, in an emergency phase of a conflict, it's quite limited. There are some medicines that can be given for very acute, almost psychosis, when they're suffering from war, from a trauma of seeing their village attacked and then running from it. But it is limited in this phase of the war.
Are you able to talk with these refugees, with these people, about their plight?
Certainly we do. What we do is we try to get testimonials from the people. And it's actually quite difficult taking these testimonials from these people to listen to their stories of their villages. Today we took a testimonial from a lady who said she had been gone for 2 weeks from a house, and I asked if she'd gone back. She pointed to the hill, and we were watching her village burn today as it was shelled in the morning. So these people are talking about their villages being destroyed and atrocities, and it is very difficult to listen to their stories, but we certainly we do, and we record them.
How much have you had to navigate and negotiate between warring, fighting parties in Kosovo?
A daily basis. We'll go through up to 12 checkpoints a day. I think that was our record in the last couple of months. Each checkpoint is they check our documents, our passports. They check our vehicles. Sometimes we have to open up all our boxes. They search us. And then you cross front lines on the other side, and they also do the similar process. So you can take literally hours and hours to get through to the people on a daily basis. And sometimes we're utterly refused and we're turned around and sent back home.
Refused for what reason?
We don't know. We're told, frequently we're told, we have orders. Now the police will say, we have orders, you can't go any further. And that's when we try to ask. It's the front line. These things are tense. Sometimes we just simply cannot get into it anymore.
Just how critical is the situation in Kosovo?
Well, it's bad. There are some bad problems here, and we fear it could go either way in a hurry. If it suddenly starts raining here and it gets cool, then we're going to see a lot of deaths. Certainly increased number of deaths if it suddenly gets rainy and cool, or if the fighting suddenly explodes in areas where these refugees see that they're basically safe havens.
Have you worked in other conflicted parts of the world?
Sure. I've been in the Somali refugee camps, been in Bosnia a couple times, Chechnya, Sri Lanka, other a number of different conflicts throughout the world, yes.
Is there a way of comparing what you're seeing in Kosovo to these other parts of the world where you've also been?
The situation seems similar to the early days of Bosnia in the way of having to stand there and watch villages burn and people being sent out into the forest. So it's quite similar. There's a lot of similarities to Bosnia. Some of the heavy fighting with all this heavy army equipment looks like the war in Afghanistan. Unfortunately, there are a lot of similarities to other conflicts.
Do you imagine yourself being there for some time now?
I think there's no question. As an emergency coordinator, I'll be here for a while, yes.
Well, I wish you best of luck, and I thank you very much for joining us today on Fresh Air.
Okay, well, thank you, and I hope to talk to you again soon.
Keith Ursel coordinates the mobile clinic program for Doctors Without Borders in Kosovo. This is Fresh Air.